Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Second Take. Today, we are going to be going through NBA offseason moves, including any moves we thought were important. Unfortunately, we won't be able to get to every single one today, but we'll be talking about teams like DeMar DeRozan to the Kings. Can Victor Wembanyama lead the Spurs to the playoffs? Are the Oklahoma City Thunder favorites in the Western Conference now? Paul George to Philly, and much more. We'll also take a look at how loaded the Western Conference has become and who we think next year will be able to rise to the top of the West and ultimately make that playoff cut, which is looking more and more difficult. And we will end off our episode today talking about Team USA as they have started training camp and played one game against Canada. We're going to talk about some of the teams that we think will be the biggest threats to the U.S. and if anyone can really match them if they're playing at their best. So without any hesitation, let's go ahead and jump into it. We'll start with one of the more recent moves in the NBA, Roland. The Sacramento Kings probably made one of the first win now moves I've ever seen them make in my entire life because they missed the playoffs for like 20 years. They signed DeMar DeRozan to a 3-year, $73 million contract. What does this do for the Sacramento Kings, or doesn't do?
At face value, I liked how Sacramento was aggressive and they made a move, right? Like you said, our entire life, they've sucked until the 2022 playoffs. That was the first time we had ever seen them in our lifetime in the playoffs. So I like the aggressiveness. There's no point in trying to go back the other way. Some may argue that the fit alongside Sabonis and Fox isn't truly kind of ideal, being that DeRozan isn't really an elite floor spacer. He's much more a mid-range assassin as well as attacking the basket, much like De'Aaron Fox. But I don't think they really have any other choice, right? I like that they were aggressive. At best, they're fighting for a fifth or sixth seed in the West, kind of just fighting for a playoff spot at this point. I believe that this helps raise their floor, but it doesn't really raise their ceiling for me. So that I like the move. It's not going to really, in the end, make that much of a difference in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, taking a look at this, essentially what the Sacramento Kings did here is they upgraded Harrison Barnes for DeMar DeRozan, which I think everyone can agree that that's an upgrade, and they did get better at that spot, right? This is like the most frisky team in the West. I think they can be a home court team. I don't necessarily think they're a title contender, mostly because their offense has probably got a little better just because Harrison Barnes is old and aging. But it didn't really fix their defensive problems, which I think was the main concern with this team last year, as they lost in the play-in and ultimately didn't make the playoffs. I do think, like you said, this does raise their floor. I feel good about this team being a certified playoff team. You know, they have two of the best closers in the NBA with DeMar DeRozan and De'Aaron Fox. Offensively, like I said, super talented. All of their defense really comes off the bench. I mean, they drafted Devin Carter, upgraded him from Davion Mitchell, Ellis. They re-signed Alex Len. Just all of their backups kind of play defense, not really the starting lineup. And my only reason why I think the Kings can be a home court team is just because I do think there are significant teams in the West who did get worse. So it does give the chance for the Kings to move up if it does work with that group of their main three guys.
Home court is a stretch, okay? I really believe that they're in that sixth seed area, but you know, they're not going to beat Denver or Dallas or OKC or Minnesota in a playoff series unless an injury occurs, right? That's not out of the question. So there is so much parity in the West right now that it really comes down to which team's the healthiest come playoff time. So that's another reason, another plus in the Sacramento column for making this move, right? If you're healthy and the other team's not, you're probably going to beat a Denver or a Minnesota without, you know, with an injured Mike Conley or Gobert. You're going to probably beat Dallas if they're missing one of their two stars, right? So I like the move. What else are you going to do if you're Sacramento? You know what I mean? That's kind of where I'm at. It's cool. They're going to be fun to watch. They're still not a top dog in their conference.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Like, they're good. They got better. They're going to be a good regular season team. Playoffs, it's going to depend a lot on matchups. I feel like that's kind of what the West is going to become anyways, as we saw a lot this year. But, yeah, I think the Kings can be good. I don't really see them winning. But like you said, when it comes down to it, if someone gets hurt, you just give yourself a chance. And we saw one of the old guys get paid in DeMar DeRozan. Because there were a lot of older free agents out there this year. So we'll see what happens there. But speaking of playoff teams in the Western Conference, the San Antonio Spurs have made a couple of moves, including, well, A, Victor Wembanyama is going into his second NBA season. He'll probably play more games, get more minutes. They drafted Stephon Castle, number 4 overall, signed CP3 to a 1-year, $11 million deal, and they traded for Harrison Barnes, who will be a veteran presence for this team. Do you think the Spurs are a playoff team next year?
Okay, I'm going to preface my thoughts on whether or not they're going to be a playoff or a play-in team next season with the fact that I love everything they've done this offseason, okay? They, like you said, they went out and acquired Chris Paul. They're basically pulling what Oklahoma City did 4 years ago in the bubble. And they're just doing it right now. It's a proven method. Go get Chris Paul to mentor your young guys. And then within a couple years, those young guys are going to take a leap because they've learned so much from Chris Paul. Just ask SGA. He gloats about that one season with Chris Paul and how it changed his game. And now look at him. He's an MVP candidate every year. So I love that acquisition. It's going to teach Wemby. It's going to teach all of their young guards that they have to build around Wemby in the future. Worth every penny, even if he doesn't play much, right? And then they also got Harrison Barnes and the unprotected pick swap for the Kings in 2031. You basically got that stuff for free, for nothing. So how can you hate on that? I mean, they're just getting better now, and they have a future asset that when we're in Wemby's prime, they can use to probably trade for something else. So I love what they've done. However, I look at them as a sleeper tank team. I think that the front office of the Spurs is going to be able to go to Wemby and say, hey, we're giving you Chris Paul. We're giving you Harrison Barnes. We're giving you some veteran experience so that you can have a shot at making the playoffs. But behind the scenes, they're kind of crossing their fingers that they don't. You know what I mean? If Wembanyama is able to take this team that only won 22 games last season with an old Chris Paul and Harrison Barnes, who had a very down year and might be washed, to the playoffs, he's got to be on your MVP ballot. That's all I'm saying. So I really look at it as the front office is saving face with their star, saying, hey, we're looking to get better now, when in reality, they're taking the slow train to success.
Yeah, I mean, I think my favorite thing that you brought up is the fact that they brought in Chris Paul and mostly as a mentor type role, which, like you said, has worked. And they drafted Stephon Castle, number 4. He already has the physical traits. He already has the defense. He has some natural ability, passing, cutting, right? Really needs to work on his shot. Wasn't off guard at UConn, but they want him to be their long-term point guard. And that's what Stephon Castle wanted as well. And when you have Chris Paul already there, I don't really think there's any other better player right now that he could learn from to translate his skills into being a full-time point guard. So, and not only that, they actually got someone who will be able to get Wemby the ball consistently when he does play, which was a big problem for the Spurs last year. So just making that group more cohesive, just overall make that offense flow better, I think is just going to help the development even more of the for their young players. They'll have progression from some of their younger guys, Devin Vassell, Jeremy Sochan. But like you said, they made moves mostly to develop, get some older guys out there who can just help the young guys. I also don't think they're a playoff team quite yet. I think they're a play-in team, but the play-in team that loses is where I see the San Antonio Spurs, just because I think Wemby is going to be special enough where they're going to win 35-plus games, but not have that kind of depth overall on their roster to win a play-in game.
I'm in complete agreeance. There's a lot of people out there that are super high on the Spurs due to these acquisitions, and then, of course, Wemby heading into his second year. I can't completely say that they're not going to make the playoffs, because Wembanyama could have just an insane season. He's someone that you can't really put a ceiling on quite yet, just because of how effective defensively he is. Like you said, you got someone that can throw him a post-entry pass, a lost art in the NBA. So I like the moves. This trade that they made for Harrison Barnes made me question what the hell the Bulls are doing, or the Bulls, because this was all a three-team trade with DeMar DeRozan, and they got, what did they get in return? The Spurs got the most valuable asset, which is that 2031 pick swap with Sacramento.
Yeah,
who knows how they're going to be.
The Bulls got Chris Duarte from the Kings and 2 second-round picks. So essentially, what they were saying is, DeMar, please leave us alone.
It's so funny how the team that gave up absolutely nothing in the trade won the trade. They got Harrison Barnes. Who cares? That unprotected pick swap in 2031 is going to be valuable. Fox is going to be old. Sabonis is going to be old. DeRozan's going to be gone.
Yeah.
Who knows how good the Kings are going to be in that? That could be a crazy asset that they can use to flip for a quality player when Wembanyama is in his prime. So I love every move. They've somehow been able to pull off a let's get slightly more competitive now while also stack assets for the future. This entire offseason, they've been able to do that. But like you said, around that 35 win mark is where I'm comfortable. In a loaded West. If they were in the East, they'd probably make the playoffs. But the West, there's 13 teams that are going to be fighting for that 8th seed.
Yeah, you know, we both think just go let the young guys get older, let the young guys get better, and then use or trade your picks in the future. But I think once 2025, 2026 comes, the Spurs are going to be a fixture in the playoffs again, Well, in 2 years, I should say, not this upcoming year, but the year after, I think we'll just see them in the playoffs for the next decade plus, for as long as Wemby's there, honestly.
I agree. I'm going to give Wembanyama one more year of whatever, it doesn't matter. He's super young and the team sucks. And then after that, it's going to be, all right, let's start winning some playoff games. The real question I have for you is, in this upcoming season, how high would you draft Victor Wembanyama in a fantasy league?
Are you talking about like a fantasy league with fantasy points scored, or like the football version?
Yeah, yeah. So if you've ever played fantasy basketball, I just think he's going to have a crazy statistical season.
I'd take him top five, probably. I mean, he gets blocks and boards and points, and I bet his field goal percentage goes up. I think he's got to go top five.
The four kind of consensus are always Jokic, Giannis, Doncic, and Embiid. And then you got SGA, who you can argue there, as a fantasy number one pick in the first round. After that, I think Wembanyama clears everyone, just for blocks alone. I might take him over Embiid, because I know he'll play more games.
Also very true. Like... They sat him out a few games last year, but I bet this year he plays more games at least. And Embiid is just, he's an interesting case. I'm sure we'll get to him when Team USA comes around.
Yeah, okay, that was whatever. We'll get that at the end of the pod. But
oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Fouling and, out in 12 minutes.
Oh yeah. FIBA rules. And you know, speaking of another team who Wemby kind of messed up their year, if you want to, you know, look at it that way, at the end of the season. But I know a team that you really had your eye on of kind of like, what are they doing? The Denver Nuggets, the last 2 years since they've won the ring, they lost Bruce Brown due to cap restrictions. They lost KCP this offseason. Both were key rotational players. And KCP could have come back, it looks like. But his contract got matched by Denver, and he still chose to go to Orlando. Why are you shaking your head about Denver so far?
Out of all the true title contenders there are in the NBA, Denver had the most disappointing offseason. They lost KCP simply over money, which is a travesty in my mind. Yes, some may argue that KCP's production could be replaced with cheaper, younger guys that they already have in-house. That's at least what the front office is saying to all of us to kind of smooth the, oh crap, we lost our fourth best player, arguably. And he did have a lackluster postseason this year. He only averaged 8 points per game, 3 assists, and 3 rebounds. Okay, so you could argue, hey, can we get that from somebody else? Probably. However, I think that this will have a similar impact to when Bruce Brown left, right? Their chances of winning the title after Bruce Brown left diminished more so than we thought. We all had Denver winning back-to-back. They got bounced in the second round, and now they got worse. They got worse by losing KCP. Now there's going to be a lot more on Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., especially on the defensive end, which I don't like at all. So I think this one loss puts them a tier below the true title contenders of the West. I don't think we can say that they're a top three team anymore in the West because of this simple loss.
Yeah, Denver just slowly losing their depth pieces and slowly getting worse every offseason. They'll still be a playoff team because Jokic is just that good. You know, some ways they tried to replace some of their depth. They drafted Daron Holmes, but he's a young guy, so we'll see if he gets minutes or not. They signed Dario Saric, who will probably play over DeAndre Jordan, which I guess they did need. But then they're also interested in Russell Westbrook, who's still on the Clippers as of right now.
We know how that's going to go. That's going to go fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. At this point in his career, it will go great. But yeah, Denver just, they're going to be relying on a lot of their young guys. And granted, I think they can jump back into being true title contenders if some of these young guys do pop. But I'm not expecting it maybe this quickly. If any of their young guys do get better, I think this could be over the course of 2-3 seasons, not just hopping into their second year or rookies coming in. So I agree with you in Denver being outside of that like high status contender tier. They can definitely beat a team or two if someone gets like one of those contenders gets hurt. They can definitely compete with them. They're not going to be an easy out. Jokic might win another MVP because his stats might look insane on this team just because of their lack of depth now. But this is also something we're seeing a result of the new rules coming into play and Denver not being willing to go into the extreme penalties, second apron, where they can't really sign any guys except minimum guys. They can't really make any big trades. So they're just kind of choosing to bet on player development and their future going forward.
It's fair. I mean, if you run it back with the same group, you're basically just saying, hey, we should have won game 7. Mm-hmm. You probably should have. You were up by 20 plus at halftime, and then you completely fell apart. You could also say Jamal Murray was kind of hampered. But, I mean, he also stepped up big in the series before. I mean, you can make a lot of excuses. One that's inexcusable is having the best player in the world and just avoiding the tax because you don't want to pay it, right? You're losing, I would say, your fourth best player. I like KCP more than I do Michael Porter Jr. I know Michael Porter Jr. gives you more on offense, but he's a bullfighter on defense. It's ole all day. So you're losing a very key piece to a team that has championship aspirations. I'm just baffled. It's a great pickup by the Magic. Maybe Jokic doesn't care. Maybe he's going to retire in 3 years when his contract's up. You know what I mean? And maybe that's why they're not willing to go into the tax, because they know their best player is going to leave in 4 years because he wants to go ride horses. I don't know.
I think the worst thing for the Nuggets team is the fact that for Bruce Brown and KCP, they lost them for absolutely nothing. And I think that's what hurts the most, because theoretically they couldn't have done anything about Bruce Brown because he signed a 1-year cheap deal and they had no rights for him. But KCP, they had his bird rights. They could have paid him a little more, brought him back. And then if they're really worried about their money, they could have traded him for a lesser contract or something. But
there you go.
They just let him go for nothing. And, you know, we'll see if that pays off. But I think Denver takes a step back next season.
Exactly. I'm always on the side of sign the player and figure it out later, because KCP has trade value. There are plenty of teams that would be willing to trade for him. Okay. You'd at least get something back. You could say the same thing about the Clippers with Paul George. That's a whole nother segment, but sign the player and get something out of him instead of just letting him walk away. You know, the new rules, I don't even want to pretend to know what's going on, but what I see is an owner being cheap when they have the best player in the world. And if I'm the Nikola Jokic or Jamal Murray, I'm kind of looking at this like, what are you doing? Like, we got a chance to be a legit championship level team, and we just got worse. So they are the biggest losers of the offseason, in my opinion, because they actually have a chance. The Clippers, I mean, they've been done for a while. So
speaking of favorites in the West, Oklahoma City Thunder is a team that might have won the offseason, if we're being honest, not necessarily because they made the biggest moves, but because they made the right moves. And I know we were big fans of Dallas at the trade deadline this last season, making the right moves to improve the team. Oklahoma City seems to have done that early in this offseason. What have you liked about them bringing in Caruso and Hartenstein, and what this can potentially do for the team?
I completely agree. They won the offseason. They have not so sneakily become the best team in the West. Okay. They acquired Caruso, like you said, Hartenstein, and Denver taking a step back. All three of those things makes them, without a doubt, the best team in the West. They are the favorites. I don't think anyone can kind of sniff at that. The only thing that I can really see derailing this team is health, because that can derail anyone. The biggest win for them is they've been able to do all of this, adding depth at a position that they needed with Hartenstein, adding perimeter defense and shooting with Alex Caruso, and veteran leadership, a proven champion, really, without giving up a single draft pick. That's just like, they have literally all of the draft picks in the NBA, and Sam Presti just flexed his muscles and said, I'm not giving up crap. He didn't give up anything. He gave up Josh Giddey, who wasn't a good fit, and turned that into Caruso and Hartenstein.
And for example, the Thunder traded up in this year's draft to pick 26 to draft Dylan Jones, and they gave up 5 second round picks to pick a rookie, and they didn't give any to the Bulls. And it seemed like OKC might have been willing, but maybe the Bulls just never asked. But since we are on the topic of the Thunder, everyone knows who listens. We all know what Caruso brings. We've talked about before, the defense, the shooting, like you said, the winning. But I also think Hartenstein really does do a lot for this team. He got a big contract, right? It's theoretically a 3-year deal. The last year is not guaranteed, so it's a team option. He's getting like $30 million a year, but they have the cap space now. They can keep him for 2 years. If in that third year, they want to free up that money, they can easily do so. So it gives the team flexibility and Hartenstein a payday, a win-win in my opinion. It adds rim defense for when Chet is out of the game, which was needed, and rebounding, which was really needed for this team. Not that the Jalen Williams, who is the center, isn't good. He's mostly just a stretch five who's a little undersized. And Hartenstein, as we saw, is just a dog in New York. Like, he won the job. I know Robinson got hurt, but he ended up starting when Robinson came back. He was just, he played phenomenal. Even if you look at his stats, it doesn't look like it. His impact on the court is much more than the stats. And he can also be kind of a playmaking hub for them. Kind of like a mini Sabonis. He's not to that level, but you can throw him the ball at the high post and he can make plays for others. And I think that just helps the development of their young players and their young stars who are going to continue to get shots and good looks because of this. So I'm big fan of both moves.
Fantastic pickup. The best part is when Chet or J-Dub, when it's time to pay them, they can get off of Hartenstein's money. It's a fantastic team-friendly deal that they were able to craft. Okay, 2 years, we're basically going to have Hartenstein as a rental for 2 years. And then when we have to pay our young stars, we can move off that money while just extending the window, right? It's crazy what they've been able to do over there in Oklahoma City, from having Westbrook, Harden, Durant, to feeling like the end of the world when Durant left, to now they're, I mean, I might say they're the best team, them in Boston, but they're going to be able to stick around for longer than Boston does. I mean, with all this money and all this new CBA and second apron crap that's going on, Boston might not be able to stay as is for as long as Oklahoma City can. So they've won the offseason, and I still can't believe they have literally all the draft capital in the world.
Yeah, if you wanted one team's future in the NBA, you would pick the Oklahoma City.
Yeah, it's not even close.
Anytime. Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of, because OKC has had a lot of all-stars come in and out throughout the years, probably more than any other team if we think about it. But speaking of a former OKC star, Paul George ends up with the Philadelphia 76ers after reports of him and the Clippers negotiations going sour, the Clippers being unwilling to trade him to Golden State, which he seemingly said he wanted on his podcast originally. And then going out to the free agent market with Philly being really the only team that could offer him money, but also being a pretty good fit on the surface, it seems. What have you liked so far about Philly's offseason, and do you like or don't like them adding Paul George?
I think it's a win for both sides, right? If you ran it back in Philly, what could you really expect? I mean, Maxey probably could have taken a little bit more of a leap, you know? But then you're really just banking on Joel Embiid being healthy again, which is never a good bet. And that's where this all comes back to, right? I really like what they've done around the edges after this deal. They were able to keep Kelly Oubre Jr., which was a shock to me. They signed Caleb Martin for free, cheap money. Andre Drummond, as well as Eric Gordon. All of these ancillary additions to build around their big three, I think, is more impactful than even adding Paul George in and of itself. Because the thought was Paul George comes in, and then who else are they going to get? They're going to turn into the Phoenix Suns again. Well, their role players are significantly better than what they've got going on in Phoenix. So that's the big win of this move, more so than even getting Paul George.
Yeah, you know, they signed Paul George to a big long-term deal, and he's going to be the third best player on that team. He's the third guy. If and when probably Embiid gets hurt and misses some games, you know, he can step up and be a number two guy. I think they would rather give Maxey more of those reins at this point in their careers. But I think that's okay, and it's probably better for Philly's chances to actually go out and win. And they did sign Maxey. He's back on a big extension. As you mentioned, I really like the moves they did. I also brought back Kyle Lowry. They drafted Jared McCain from Duke, who can eventually fill that backup point guard role, kind of plays a little bit like Tyrese Maxey. Made a ton of win now moves, flipped the roster upside down for the most part. Health will be the most important thing for this team to compete because they need Embiid healthy for the playoffs. I don't care about Embiid in the regular season, if we're being honest. The Phillies should play him 24 minutes a game in the regular season just so he doesn't get hurt, just so he can be healthy at the end of the year. Like, they got to do something. He don't need to be playing 36 minutes a night. He doesn't need to be chasing the MVPs. He needs to be healthy for the playoffs. Take more of a Spurs role, Tim Duncan role with Joel Embiid Philly. But if they're healthy, I think they're contenders. And they'll be in the playoffs, and they can compete with Boston and New York at the peak of their powers. And another thing I've noticed with these three teams, who I think are kind of the top teams in the East at this point, Boston, New York, and Philly, they're all going with three big wings for the most part on their team, right? Philly's going to have Kelly Oubre, Caleb Martin, Paul George. Boston already has Derek White, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. New York's going to have Bridges, Ananobi, and Randall. Like, no, then the little shooting guards are going away. The undersized power forwards are really not seeing as much either. We're getting a lot of big wings, guys who are 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", and above, who can play both sides of the ball. And honestly, the top of the East after this Philly offseason is going to be really fun to watch.
If you had to pick an order between those three, where are you slating Philadelphia?
I'm putting them third. If all teams are healthy and playing at their best, I still think, like I said, they compete with those teams. They still compete, but I think they would be the third best.
I agree with you, mostly because it takes a full year for most teams to reach their full potential. Okay, just ask the 2011 Heat. Okay. When you plug in a Paul George and you kind of completely revamp the roster around a big three, it takes time for everyone to adjust to themselves. New York won't have that issue because they've played together already in college. So that's just like the ultimate chemistry move. And then Boston's already done it. So that's kind of my big thing with Philadelphia. I don't expect them to actually come out of the East. I think they're right at that third spot unless Giannis goes freak mode. But they're behind New York and Boston, and I don't know if it's as close as we think it really is, because Paul George and Joel Embiid both have history of being injured when it matters most. So I don't want to put all my eggs in the Philadelphia basket. They're interesting, and I think this is their best window in Joel Embiid's entire career to actually make noise. It's just unfortunate that Boston's as good as they are.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's wrong to bet on Philly, and I'm not going to bet on Philly to win or really like do anything, mostly because of Joel and Paul George, his history. But we know who they are. We know who they can be when they're good. And I'm really just excited to see those three teams at the top of the East battle. Like you said, maybe Milwaukee gets kind of frisky in there. You know, maybe Cleveland figures it out finally. Who knows? But, you know, I feel good about Philly kind of entering that, like, contending status in the East, even if they're not the favorites going forward. They do kind of need a win in the next couple years here, though, for being honest. Oh, yeah. At Joel's contract, Paul George is only going to get older, and they'll have to decide if they want to keep Joel or not if they're not winning. So
this is a 2 or 3 year play. They don't have much time to dick around here. So they've got 2 or 3 seasons at most, which, you know, you take the shot. You're going to swing for it. I like that they did it. It's not like I would say if you go back in time, don't sign Paul George. It's just, I'm trying to have realistic expectations for Philadelphia.
Absolutely. And speaking of realistic expectations, for me, with this specific team we're talking about next, I'm trying to just figure out what their expectations are in general, being the Toronto Raptors.
I don't even know.
Their last few years have been interesting.
This is crazy.
So,
all right.
So this offseason, right? We'll just go through it real quick. They brought back Garrett Temple, who is an end of the bench vet to fill a roster spot. They signed Scotty Barnes to a contract extension. Good move. They signed Quickly to a contract extension, who they traded OG for. You know, it's an interesting trade because they didn't get any picks back, but they kept the guy who they traded for and hope he can be their point guard of the future. They did take a flyer on Davion Mitchell, which I don't hate because they didn't give up anything to get him, but he's kind of been a bust so far with the Kings. And probably the worst thing about this so far is they didn't get their pick this year because they traded it to the Spurs in the Jakob Poeltl trade, two of them to be exact. So they didn't get their pick, even though they kind of tanked out to end the year. It was protected and it fell out of those protections, obviously. But like, their team isn't that great. They don't have a ton of talent. They don't seem to want to bottom out. They really only have their own picks, though. They have a Pacers pick in 26, which probably won't be great. What are you thinking about Toronto's direction?
It's awful. I mean, it's malpractice is what it is. Okay. They won't be good enough to do anything, but they're not incentivized to be bad enough to do anything, right? If I was a GM in the NBA, most teams would suck. Let's be honest here. If every team ran their team how I would envision running it, everyone's, if you don't have a chance to win, if you don't have a chance to win, you're tanking. Okay. I know that's terrible for every fan base out there. If you were a fan of my team running your basketball team, you'd probably hate me more than you love me. But this is the prime example of what you're not supposed to do. You're signing Quickly, a backup point guard who maybe he's going to do great. We don't really know what Quickly is yet. 5 years, $175 million.
It was a lot of money. A lot of money.
What are you doing? Scotty Barnes, you give him the max. Some might argue, I think he's overrated as a player. I don't think he's a one in today's NBA. Uh-oh. You're giving him max money. He's got to be your one. $400 million, but Quickly and Barnes. I'm not done yet. RJ Barrett still is owed $30 million every year. So when these extensions kick in, you're going to be owing $110 million for RJ Barrett, Scotty Barnes, and Emmanuel Quickly. What are you doing, Toronto? This is malpractice at its finest. You're destined to be at best a 10th seed and constantly missing the playoffs with a low lottery pick. I don't understand this. They're confused, I think, more so than I am with what they're doing.
And, you know, just some context for anyone who is listening. So if they're paying those three guys $110 million, the NBA salary cap this upcoming season is like $144 million.
That means
they would have $30 million to fill out the rest of their 12-man roster after giving all their money to the three guys. That's difficult. And it's crazy because I thought their GM was actually good. Because, like, he brought Kawhi Leonard there, and he built that whole team, and that whole, like, job there was awesome. I know Kawhi didn't resign, but they want a ring out of it. And it's like, but that same guy who built that team is also doing this right now. And the only way I see progression with this route that the Raptors are going is something that you did touch on, is if Scotty Barnes becomes a superstar. Because other than that, like, are they going to do a big-time trade? I know they wanted Dame and they had interest in Kevin Durant in their older age, but that's a hard thing to bet on, as you've seen. Like, teams can't just go out there and trade for superstars when they feel like it. Have to be opportunistic and get lucky sometimes. So unless Scotty Barnes becomes a star and then they have a bunch of good role players around him, which they have a bunch of good role players, but who are getting paid a lot of money. It's like, that's probably the best way for them to be a consistent playoff team. But I don't know if I like Scotty Barnes. I think he's a great player, but is he going to be a superstar? To be determined. He's got to shoot the ball a little better, be a little more aggressive, know that he's the guy. So they're really, really betting on Scotty Barnes' development here.
Oh, it's a huge bet on Scotty. And, you know, I hope it works out. I'm nothing against Toronto. I'm 100% indifferent about the Toronto Raptors. I could care less. You know, I don't have any hatred towards them. I'm not a fan either. But just looking at this from the outside in, it's confusing. RJ Barrett, not that great. You know, he's kind of an empty stats player so far in his career. Emmanuel Quickly, I'm just confused why they gave him that much money. I didn't think that was the market value for Emmanuel Quickly. I think you could have got him for $50 million less. That's the biggest thing. And then Scotty, I don't think you needed to offer him the full max either. So I think they're overpaying for a trio of young guys that won't get you anywhere. And that's why it just baffles me what's going on in Toronto. It's not going to matter because they're not going to be a big player in anything over the next couple of years. It's just, I had to bring it up because
yeah,
it makes no sense.
And you know, this team is a team that really should try to bottom out, but they're not bad enough to bottom out. And, you know, they still have a chance. I mean, they're in the East. They can make the play-in in the East. Not that hard to do in the East.
If you want to be
and
the
that's
eighth
kind of
seed
where they're looking
in
at
the Eastern Conference, you got a shot at it. You're not going to win anything.
Nope.
It's just crazy to me. It's insane. Yeah.
And, you know, looking over at the Western Conference, it's going to be a lot harder just to make the play-in game. When I sit here and I look at the Western Conference as a whole, I go down that list to 15 teams. I see 13 of the 15 teams I can make an argument for of why they could make the playoffs. And I'm talking about make the play-in, win a play-in game, just make a top eight spot. I can make a case for 13 of the teams. The Blazers and the Jazz are very likely the two teams that are not going to be in that conversation
next year.
The Jazz
better not be in that conversation or I'm going to be pissed.
Oh, man. I would be surprised if they were, to be honest, with the way everything's gone. But, it's fair. But, you know, other than that, in the West, those two teams are going to have a great time tanking while the other 13 teams blood battle it out.
No, it's going to be
wonderful. We're going to have, five good teams missing the playoffs?
Yep.
Like, they could all have winning records, too. Like, I wouldn't be that surprised. But looking at this Western Conference, Roland, I want you to give me who, if you had to pick today, right now, based on how transactions are today, we have to make sure we say that because things can change in the future. But how the NBA is today, who are your top eight teams who you like to make the playoffs in the West?
Before we dive into this, the Western Conference is a perfect example of why the play-in is such a wonderful thing. It is truly made like 13 teams.
Everyone has a chance
for a playoff spot. Everyone has a chance in a one-off
chance.
Yeah. So kudos to the NBA for sticking with this. I know a lot of the players when it first came out kind of hated the idea. It's made the bottom teams in the West especially a lot more interesting. Right. I would never take a flyer on Houston. But now that there's a play-in, who knows? So anyway, going back, the eight teams I've got, the number one team by far, the Oklahoma City Thunder. We can both agree there, right? They're probably going to be the best team with the best record in the West. Do you have any rebuttal against that?
No, I feel good about OKC. They're my favorite in the West.
Okay. My next tier is two teams. You got Minnesota and Dallas. Okay. If you had to choose between those two, which team do you think will end with a better record?
Minnesota.
I agree.
If I'm being completely honest, I know Klay Thompson going there makes their offense better, but it might have made their defense worse, and it might have made the Mavs worse because they didn't need more offense. That's just my opinion. They're still good. They'll still compete. It's a small thing. We'll see. But that's just my thoughts on that.
I think picking up Klay Thompson and Quentin Grimes for Derek Jones Jr. and Tim Hardaway was, at worst, a lateral move. I think it made them about 5% better because that team, when it mattered most, could not score. Okay, they didn't break 100 points in the finals more than in one game. So
that's fair.
I think they really will use Klay shooting. Defensively, I think Lively is going to take a step. So
he's nice.
I think they'll be fine defensively. But I do agree. I think Minnesota will end with a better record.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue which team's better. I think Dallas really put a whooping on Minnesota in the playoffs, and that still kind of is resonating in my mind when I pick this. But Minnesota, I think, is more built for the regular season than Dallas. In the next tier, all by themselves, I have this titled the puncher's chance tier. It's the Denver Nuggets.
Hmm.
I think they're the fourth best team in the West after losing KCP. They have the best player in the world. Do you agree with my top four so far, if you had to rank them?
If I had to rank them, no, I like your top three. I think Denver falls further than four.
Wow, even with the best player in the world.
Yes, because I think parity in the NBA and in the West is so high now. I just don't think they have the depth or the talent that some of these other teams do. I still think they'll be top six, but I don't really see them at four as of today.
Okay, so you have reacted even more so than I have to the Denver Nuggets losing KCP. Well, and I was frustrated after they
did that. And it's really 2 years, the last it's 2 years.
The last the guys 2 years lost.
Just a step down every year. I don't really feel great. Like, there's going to be a lot of learning curves for this team, and we might see some good runs from them. I just don't think they'll be dominant like they were when they won.
No, that's without question. That's why I have them at four. You might have them lower. The next tier I have is a group of three teams, and I have them labeled as certified playoff teams. They're my 5 through 7 in the West, technically. And at number five, I have Memphis.
That's a good one. I'm glad you put them here.
A lot of, you know, it's weird for me to be on kind of defending the Grizzlies. You know, I've never truly believed in Memphis as a true, like, contender in the West. Even when they had that second seed and they were matching up against the Lakers in the first round, I knew LA would blow them out. But I feel like a lot of people have forgotten about them. So I find myself in uncharted territory as a Grizzly defender. You know what I mean? So this all comes down to, will Ja Morant be healthy? Will he be available? If so, they're going to be a top five team. They have depth. They have young depth. That's going to, and they have continuity.
Mm-hmm. So, and defense.
They
got a lot of defense.
They got everything. I battled between Denver and Memphis at that four spot. I just ultimately went with Denver over them because they got Jokic. But Memphis is definitely going to make the playoffs next year.
Yes. Oh, yeah. They're in for a big bounce back here. I think, like you said, no one talked about them last year. They had the worst injury luck, like, in all honesty. And they're going to come back with a chip on their shoulder as well. So I think they're going to really try to make a point about winning regular season games too. So I wouldn't be surprised if they got up as high as four. So,
yeah, they definitely could. The regular season might just be random. I just have this more in an order of when it comes down to the playoffs, these are the teams. Seeding, Memphis could shoot up to a home court advantage team, like you're saying, just because they'll take the regular season a little bit more seriously. They have youth on their side, and as long as they're healthy, they're a quality team. The next two that I have making the playoffs for sure are the Phoenix Suns and the Sacramento Kings. Phoenix might be kind of a shock after they got completely bounced out of the first round. But with Booker and KD, they're good enough to at least squeak in to the playoffs.
It feels like their floor is a playoff team. Like, healthy, it feels like that's their floor. You know?
They're not going to win a series, I don't think. They're definitely not going to win unless they get a crazy favorable matchup.
Yeah, like, well, you just...
But
yeah, it doesn't feel like they're built for the playoffs around their stars.
I'd also feel wrong if I didn't include them as a playoff team. Mm-hmm. You know, Durant and Booker are still at the peak of their powers, and that should be good enough to get you at least a seventh seed. Mm-hmm. And then you got Sacramento. I really like the move that they made with DeRozan. I think that upped their floor a little bit. Those are my seven for sure playoff teams in the West. So you got Oklahoma City, Dallas, Minnesota, Denver, Memphis, Phoenix, and Sacramento. The order can be jumbled, but those are the seven that I think will for sure make it. Do you have any disagreements so far on the list?
Not so far. I'm surprised because we're one team away from having the same top
the same
eight.
List.
Maybe not in the same order, because I think the order would be a little different, but the same teams. We're one team away. And honestly, if you don't pick this team, I will be very, very surprised.
I'm nervous, okay? Let's talk it out here for a second, okay?
Yeah.
Golden State, I think they actually got a little bit better. You could argue.
Okay? Yeah.
Houston, just by simply being so young, they're a very interesting team to look at. They actually played better when Sengun was injured the back half of the year, which is surprising. So
odd.
He could be on the move. They could be. There's talks of them going all in for Durant. And if that happens, then, well, Phoenix is gone. So, and then Houston would move up. But as currently constructed, those two teams are kind of back and forth. The Spurs, I don't really believe. The Clippers are, I don't think they're going anywhere. Kawhi Leonard, they're not going to make the playoffs. That's my pick. And if you had the Clippers, so be it.
I'll say this. I didn't have the Clippers, but I do like, so for losing Paul George, I do like what they did to replace him in terms of they got a lot of role guys who play defense and play hard and do have, some of them have some shooting skill. And I like how their roster is constructed together, but the problem is even more is on Kawhi Leonard now, and I don't trust that
and
at
I
all.
I don't like that, no.
So I also don't see them making the playoffs, mostly because, like, I don't think Kawhi will play enough games to
get
them there.
No, that's my point. You're looking at 20 to 30 games where it's going to be James Harden and a bunch of role players. You know, you're going to maybe...
It's not Houston James Harden
anymore. If it was Houston James Harden, it's a totally different discussion. But it's not that. So I've got the Lakers as the eighth seed.
There you go.
You know, LeBron's not going to go out on a whimper. I do think JJ may prove himself to be a competent coach, more so than Darvin Ham. And the only risk...
shouldn't be too hard.
No, it shouldn't be too hard. So... the only risk about this pick is, can LeBron and AD give you 65 games? If they do, they're going to be a playoff team, and they're going to be a formidable team. They've got decent depth. They're 1 year removed from a Western Conference Finals run. The only team that it seems that has their numbers, Denver. You know what I mean? So I had to go with the Lakers. They've got Bron, they've got AD, and they have continuity, whereas everyone else in the West that could challenge them is either too young, lost a key player, or is banking on Wembanyama averaging 35. So I went with the Lakers as my final play.
Yeah, we had the same top eight. I included the Lakers in the last spot. And honestly, my reasoning, LeBron and AD, they'll probably play enough games, they usually have. But LeBron and AD are just too good when they play for you not to make the playoffs. Yeah. Kind of like your reasoning with the Phoenix Suns. Like, and the Lakers, like, let's face it, since the play-in tournament has been created, you could argue it was just created for the Lakers, because I think every year but the first year they made the play-in tournament. That's kind of been fun for them. But... I mean, I agree with you. Thunder, Nuggets, Wolves, Mavs, Suns, Kings, Lakers, Grizzlies as just being the eight teams. we already talked about the Clippers. Golden State's putting a lot on their young guys, kind of like Denver did. Like, they did pick up some good depth pieces here and there. But, like, we've seen this before where there are teams with a ton of, like, number 8 or number 9 rotation guys on their team. And that's just too many of those guys to have because it means you don't have enough top-end talent. I just don't think they have enough top-end talent. I mean, I like Steph, obviously, but, you know, it's Draymond's Steph, a little older. Yeah, it's like Wiggins isn't the same. Like, I just, like, they have depth, but they're all kind of the same level player. And, you know, Kuminga might be their second best guy next year, and I don't know if that's good enough to make the playoffs in the West. Houston kind of depends on the jump their young guys make. But like you said, their situation between Jalen Green and Sengun will be interesting. Jalen Green played the best basketball of his NBA career at the end of the year when the Rockets played really well. And as you mentioned, Sengun was hurt during that time, but he had a fantastic year offensively up to that point. Like, Houston will be a team to watch because depending on how good their young guys got, I think will determine how far that pushes them in terms of being competitive. The biggest one I'm surprised you didn't give consideration to that I thought you would give more to were the New Orleans Pelicans. But I just, like, so DeJounte Murray gets traded. They now have DeJounte and CJ McCollum. CJ McCollum was there to be a point guard. Now he's a shooting guard, which was the kind of like the thing on him in Portland, small backcourt, scoring backcourt. I know DeJounte is bigger than Dame, but in Atlanta, DeJounte Murray's defense was awful. And he says he's going to be better. He says he's going to be better. I don't trust it yet. I'd rather see it than just have him tell me things, if I'm being honest. They have a lot of guys that need the ball in their hand. They still have Brandon Ingram on that team. They have Zion. They have DeJounte. They have CJ McCollum. Like, they want to develop Trey Murphy.
They don't,
like,
have a center.
Yeah. Well, and then that was the other point. They signed Daniel Tice. They let Val walk. They drafted a rookie out of Baylor, Misi, who was a freshman. He's 19. I don't think he's NBA ready yet. Daniel Tice, I don't want him to start at center. I don't want to start Zion at center. He's 6'6". He doesn't defend. He's an okay rebounder. Like,
he's perpetually injured. So
yeah, like, I don't love New Orleans roster right now, honestly. Like, if you were to include the Spurs, because we've talked about why we think the Spurs will miss already. Like, I think the Pelicans will probably, they might not even make the play-in unless they get a center. Talk to me if they get a center. If they get a center, they're going to get dominated at the rim and in the rebound game because they have no rebounders now. They just have a bunch of wings, and they have no rim defense. And I know people will say the center's dying, but if New Orleans runs not into really. The season with this roster, you'll believe in the center again, I promise, if you're a Pelicans fan. So,
well, it's funny. I think the center has had a huge resurgence, right? Jokic is the best player in the world. Embiid is coming off of an MVP, you know.
I mean, Hartenstein just got paid $30 million. He got paid $30 million, and he's like a mid-tier starting center.
The Pelicans have so many things you can pick at. Whether it's the fact that they're at their best when Zion's playing point guard with a lot of shooters. They decided to trade for another point guard to take the ball even further out of Zion's hands. They can't find a home for Brandon Ingram because he's going to become an overpaid player with the new apron and so on and so forth, who's another player that needs the ball in his hands to be effective. The one bright spot is they've got Trey Murphy and Herb Jones, two excellent defenders on the perimeter. But then you look, but
they might be on the bench right now.
That's what I'm saying. They're confusing. I don't know. I did not like the DeJounte Murray acquisition.
Thank you. I feel like everyone really likes it. I don't know what they're doing right now.
It didn't make sense. If you traded all that for a center, it would make more sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
But DeJounte Murray, you know, he could make it worth the Trae Young. How is he going to make it worth the CJ? I know CJ has more experience playing off the ball. And he's, you know, I don't know. This is just a big mess in New Orleans.
I mean,
it didn't make any sense. Maybe that's why I completely forgot about him.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, and in a perfect, like, in a perfect world, I think in New Orleans' mind, they would have traded Brandon Ingram for Jared Allen. But yeah, Donovan Mitchell. Yeah. And, you know, that would be a fantastic fit with them.
Then they'd probably leap Sacramento and Phoenix.
They might just do that. Move. Open up some time for your wings. He doesn't need the ball in his hands. You get a guy under a contract for a few years on cheaper money. But, you know, Donovan Mitchell runs Cleveland now, so he says, no, don't trade Jared Allen. And so they aren't trading him when it was rumored they might. So, yeah, I'm glad you agree with me on New Orleans, because I'm sure a lot of people are going to disagree with us. But let's be honest, DeJounte Murray, CJ McCollum, like, when have any of these guys on New Orleans roster been on, like, really good winning teams? CJ made one Western Conference Finals, but Portland never really did anything in the playoffs. Like, I just don't like this combination.
No, I think it's kind of a mess. So, yeah, that's why I went to LA.
And moving on to our last topic, we're going to talk about Team USA here. Things are starting to ramp up for them. Had about a week of training camp. Maybe it was only 4 days, if I heard correctly. Play Team Canada started off a little slow, but they picked it up by the end of the game. They ended up looking really good by the end of the game. Team USA obviously is favorites heading in with this roster that they have. But as we've seen in the past, they're not so guaranteed to win it all every single season, even if it looks like they have the best players. So today, me and Roland wanted to talk about a little bit who might be the biggest threats for Team USA. We already saw them play Canada, but there's still some other good teams out there. What are your thoughts on this, Roland?
The only way Team USA does not win the gold is if health gets in the way. Okay. I know that the pool is more talented than ever. France is running a pick and roll with two centers. You know what I mean? They have the bigs to compete. Canada has a backcourt to compete with the Team USA's backcourt. Serbia has the best player in the world. You know what I mean? Greece, Giannis, all of these teams have a lot more continuity as well. They played together for multiple summers, and this is the first time this Team USA iteration has played together. I'm just going to list off our 10-man rotation, okay?
Okay.
Stephen Curry, Anthony Edwards, Kevin Durant, hopefully if he's healthy, right? LeBron James, Joel Embiid. That's our starting five. Let's imagine none of those guys were playing for Team USA. Our next five is better than anyone else's starting five. You've got Tyrese Halliburton, Devin Booker, Jason Tatum, Bam Adebayo, and Anthony Davis. There is just too much for this team. Now, it might just take one bad shooting night and they could get got. That's the beauty of this whole Olympic thing. Once we're in the elimination stages, it is March Madness. You know what I mean? But I'm sorry to every other team in the world. It's not going to be fun. I don't expect a game to be within 10 points. This might be the most talented team we've ever sent out. Yes, I know the Dream Team. This is definitely the most talented team since the Dream Team. I don't think 2008 touches this. It's crazy the amount. We have assembled the Avengers to go out and redeem ourselves for what the crap happened last year.
Yeah, and you touched on the biggest advantage Team USA has, is their second unit is still full of NBA stars. Just imagine for a second that you're from Puerto Rico, and you make your Puerto Rican national team. You guys go in and you win your qualifying tournament, but you're let's just say you're the backup point guard on that team, right? You're just happy to be there. You're an Olympian. You're excited. You play in some, you know, little league in Central America, pro basketball player, make a nice living. When you come to the second unit against Team USA, you have to play against Tyrese Halliburton. Anthony Edwards came off the bench in that first game. Like you said, everyone you mentioned, you come in and then you have to go against, go guard Anthony Edwards. And this guy's an NBA superstar coming off the bench for Team USA. Like, it's just crazy the second unit they can throw out there. You know, so there are good teams out here. Serbia is a threat because they have Jokic with other NBA players, but, you know, one star NBA player, two rotation NBA guys, and two bench guys make up that starting five. Still not the same kind of talent level. France has to be a threat, mostly because their defense, you know, if Team USA doesn't shoot good, that could be a tough game for them because it's going to be hard to score on the rim against Gobert and Wemby. But as you mentioned, I mean, after I watched this Canada game, I really just believed in Team USA because I saw them make mistakes out there and they still double digits.
They played terrible.
And so, they were still just that much better than Canada.
Team Canada, I know, was ranked 7th going into this based off of the seeding that they had and the pool that they were put into. A lot of people argue they're the second best team in the world right now. You know, Germany has some say about that. France, of course, has some say about that. But we, Team USA, we, USA, beat the second, maybe third best team in the entire world by double digits. And we had an F-minus offensive performance.
They had practiced. They practiced 4 days together before that game.
It was terrible. You could tell they turned the ball over 8 times in the first quarter.
Yeah.
The bright side is our defense came to play. Mm-hmm. But offensively, we sucked. And we still won by multiple.
Oh, yeah.
By double digits, man. This is not going to be fun. As soon as Team USA hits their stride, everyone else is going to be like, what do we got ourselves into, dude? It's going to be insane. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are a couple things I really like about this team that I kind of want to go through real quick. I love that they have Bam Adebayo and Anthony Davis playing center. I don't think they've ever had both of them at the same time. But, I mean, at least against Team Canada, they just dominated them inside. And USA made a big point. They also have Joel Embiid on the roster. He had a terrible game. But we'll talk about that in a sec. Just hold off on that for a sec. But they didn't want to get dominated inside, and they didn't want to get dominated on the glass like they had in the past. And even though Steve Kerr still wants to run kind of weird lineups, I mean, he started 3 guards against Canada, and that's just who he is, and it's what he's going to do. He still has all these guys he has to play who are big. So he doesn't really have a choice. I also love that Tyrese Haliburton is on this team. I know you can argue Jalen Brunson is a better player than him. I know he probably is a better player than Tyrese. But I think Tyrese just fits this team so much better than Jalen Brunson would have. He's a bigger player.
Oh, I agree with that.
He had a fantastic defensive game. He got the ball and he pushed in transition. A fantastic passer. He was just setting guys up left and right. I think he's going to be a star in this tournament, and he's going to have one of the more underrated tournaments because he's not going to score, but he's going to do everything else.
He didn't need to. He's this team's Jason Kidd. He gets everyone the ball where they need it and when they need it. You know, let's say that we said screw defense and we put Tyrese Haliburton with Stephen Curry at our 2. How many threes does Steph make? You know what I mean? It's one of those things where we can beat you with our guard play. We can bully you down low. And then our wings are the best in the world. That's what sets us apart, is there is nobody on the planet that has the wing depth that we do. Kevin Durant's injured. That's okay. Jason Tatum. You know, Jason Tatum's not playing well. We have LeBron freaking James. Okay. It's ridiculous what we can do. And that's why the only team that can beat us is the injury bug or maybe just an off shooting night. We're the only team that could beat us. Mm-hmm. We can beat ourselves. And it's kind of always been that way, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Sorry to kind of poo poo on everybody else in the world, but we haven't sent our best squad since 2012, this is our best squad. Let's go see what you can do with it. So
exactly. And just quick little side note before I ask you our last question. if the NBA All-Star game was played this hard, that would be amazing. Because that was an exhibition game they played against Canada, and I thought both teams played really hard when a game that didn't, like, theoretically count in the standings.
Bragging rights.
Yeah, so that would be pretty cool. But my question to you is, after we watched Joel Embiid playing this game, it was very clear he wanted to play by the NBA rules and not the FIBA rules. And the FIBA refs are saying, we don't care if you actually get fouled. If you foul bait, we're not calling it, even if you get hit. So just don't do it. Do you think, because he's definitely going to have to change up his style of play, how he plays this game, because he's not going to be able to keep doing this throughout the games, as we've seen, unless, you know, the refs all of a sudden change their mind, which I don't think will happen. Do you think Joel Embiid would be better or worse if he didn't play in the NBA and he had to play? Let's say he plays in the ACDC, the best European league, the second best league in the world outside of the NBA. Do you think he's better or worse?
I think he's not as good. He does have a lot of the James Harden-esque, I play the rules, to his game. That's why he's able to score so much. And to his credit, not a lot of big guys can shoot free throws as well as he can. Mm-hmm. So, you know, get into the free throw line. I don't think he has enough kind of team-esque basketball. Like in Europe, if you're averaging 20, it's like the equivalent of averaging 30.
Yeah.
In the NBA. Just because you don't get as many shots up, it's a lot more ball movement. Defensive rules are different. You know, spacing's not as good either because you don't have as good shooters. The three-point line's a little closer. So I don't think he'd play as well in that league. Don't think it ultimately matters, right? Because the league that matters is the NBA. But our best lineup might not even include Joel Embiid, which is crazy. I think Anthony Davis is probably going to close for us in most games.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the reason why I ask this, because Joel Embiid's great. He's super talented. We know that. We know what he was before he was a foul baiter, because he wasn't always like this. But the thing is, the way he tried to foul bait in that game, and everyone knew that this wasn't working pretty early, I think, and he kept trying to do it. Like, I just wonder if he even should be, if the U.S. really even should have asked him to play. Like, I know the idea is nice, the talent's nice, the size is nice, but maybe he should be their third center, because I thought Bam and Anthony Davis played, A, they played better, and B, they just fit better with everyone else. When Embiid was on the court, USA was giving him the ball, and he was just them by, you know, doing his stupid stuff, and he's going to have to change going ahead in this tournament, or I think they're going to have to throw him on the bench and throw out Anthony Davis and give Bam more minutes, just because, honestly, like, if there was a way Team USA is going to lose, it's because they try too hard to involve Joel Embiid, and he keeps playing like this and fouls out in 13 minutes and doesn't do anything on offense because he's just drawing fouls.
Yeah. I don't hate that he's there. I mean, it's just get literally the 12 best players.
Yeah. Maybe.
I mean, there's some discussion we could have with the Derek White acquisition instead of Jaylen Brown or Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, whatever. I didn't really read too much into that because neither of those dudes is going to get much playing time if Durant's healthy. So,
and Derek White, in a way, is kind of like what we talked about Tyrese Halliburton. Like, sure, maybe you could have found someone better, but he's going to fit with all the guys you already have. And he won't be mad if he doesn't play. He won't be mad if he doesn't get shots. He's just going to play his role, play defense, and kind of, you know, be happy with it. So,
yeah. I agree. I mean, it's going to be fun to watch. I think it's going to be more fun to watch the other teams in the world play against each other. Like mm-hmm. when Greece plays Canada or mm-hmm. something like that.
Whoever's in their pool, yeah. I mean, speaking of, it is Giannis's first Olympics. So we've never seen him in the Olympics before.
Much talent. Who? What?
So this is Giannis's first Olympics.
Yeah, he's never seen
played in the Olympics before, so that will be pretty cool. I am kind of excited for the Olympics this year for basketball. I feel like it's been a few years since there's this much excitement around USA basketball.
I feel like it's because everyone is going. It's not only just Team USA is giving their best shot at it. Everyone else is going too. Like you said, it's Giannis's first year. When he played in those qualifying games, he was just insane. It was crazy awesome to watch those games of his when he went against Luka. He made Luka disappear. It's crazy. I was like, he beat Luka this year. And Giannis, who looks better? Giannis came out swinging. And it's tough because the only ding on Giannis now, and I don't think he gets enough blame for this, is he hasn't been healthy the past couple of years when it mattered most. So healthy Giannis is nothing to scoff at. Again, I think the Team USA has too much for any team to handle, but Greece is going to be fun to watch. Serbia is going to be fun to watch. Germany won the World Cup last year. You know, so there's plenty of interesting basketball to be watched outside of the U.S., whereas in the past, I would really just tune into, all right, it's Team USA doing well. Now I'm going to be following all the other teams as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you bring up a good point there. We'd like to thank everyone who tuned in and listened today. Let us know, what was your favorite offseason acquisition, and do you feel good about Team USA winning like me and Roland do? Anyways, we'd like to thank you again for watching. And until next time.